Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. As we've often discussed here on News and Views, one of the most obvious shortcomings in North Carolina's public education system involves the widely divergent levels of funding that counties across the state devote to K-12 education. Last month, in fact, the Public School Forum of North Carolina reported that the gap between what wealthy and lower-income counties spend is the largest since the forum began tracking the figure back in 1987. In part one of a special extended conversation, I got a chance to dig into the details of the disparities in local school spending and the urgent need to finally provide equitable educational opportunities to our students with the forum's Senior Director of Policy, Dr. Lauren Fox. Well, Lauren Fox, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
The Public School Forum. Just remind our listeners about the Public School Forum and the important work it does in our state.
So we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan think and do tank is what we call ourselves. So we do state level policy analysis and research focused on public education. And we also have started and run programs focused on needs that we identify to serve our schools.
Recently, y'all had your annual, you call it your Eggs and Issues Breakfast, which
yes.
is a big gathering that takes place in Raleigh where you bring people together from across the state who are interested in public education. Mm-hmm. Had a few hundred people this year. I gather it was a successful event.
Yeah, it was great. We had, you know, educators there. We had policymakers, lots of people who care about our education systems. It was a good time.
There's so much I want to talk to you about in the time we've got available. I wanted to start. Y'all recently put out a 2020 local school finance study, which looks at sort of the contrast. You compared and contrast what we're spending per student in our wealthier counties, or at least our higher spending counties and our lower spending counties. And am I right? This is a gap that's large and growing.
You know, over time, it's been consistently growing with some variation. But this year was the largest gap between the top 10 highest spending and the 10 lowest spending counties that we've ever identified in over 30 years of doing this study.
Right. And so this is on a per pupil basis.
That's right.
Is it by and large poor counties, or is it and those counties just don't have the resources
That's right.
that are there? So they're teachers get paid less, they spend less on schools generally.
Right. So that's the reason that we focus on local spending in particular, because it's dependent on property wealth. So districts that are lower wealth, even though the ones that we talk about in our study, how low wealth districts tend to tax themselves at much higher rates than higher wealth districts
right.
in an attempt to generate more funds, but they're still, because you know the baseline property values are lower, they're not able to generate that revenue.
Should we be doing something about this? I mean, it seems as if it brings about just a they're in between a rock and a hard place. If you're in a low wealth county, A, your taxes are higher and you're raising less money for this arguably the most single most important thing that government does, which is educate our children.
Right.
And we can't do it in those counties very well.
That's right. So we argue, you know, it's the state's responsibility as guaranteed by our Constitution to provide every child with access to a sound basic education. And so we argue that our state should be doing more to help bridge that gap.
Speaking of segues into important topics, sound basic education, that's a word we've been hearing about in this state, or a term we've been hearing about in this state for a quarter century. It dates back to the famous Leandro decision, which our North Carolina Supreme Court said that every child in the state has a constitutional right to an opportunity to receive a sound basic education. But obviously, even though it's been the law for well over a couple of decades, we ain't there yet. And y'all have some things to say about that. You have another major release, the top education issues of 2020, that I gather was featured at the Eggs and Issues event. And sort of the overarching issue is Leandro. We seem now to be seeing some new life breathed into the Leandro decision. We've got a governor's commission making recommendations. We've got a judge who seems poised to do something about making this order a reality, or this standard a reality. Talk to us about Leandro.
Yeah, I mean, this case has been going on since 1994 when it was first brought. And we're excited at the forum to see the recent attention that it's been given. Researchers that were commissioned by the court to WestEd to write a very thorough report found that we're actually farther away from meeting our obligation now than we were when the case first began.
Pretty disheartening.
That's right. So, you know, with this top education issues publication, we really wanted to urge our lawmakers to finally, at long last, do something. And we have this very clear research and a set of recommendations that can help get us on track.
And obviously, spending more money is an important part of that. We underinvest in public education in North Carolina to a large extent, although there's recent analysis, I know, done by Chris Nordstrom at the North Carolina Justice Center, which showed that some of the initial reports about Leandro was going to cost us $8 billion are probably inflated in terms of what it will really cost to get us to where we need to be. But let's dig into some of the specific kinds. You know, there's more to it than just spending more money, right? I mean, it's about how you spend the money and the adequacy and the equity and the flexibility issues involved. That's your number one key priority. One under this sort of guaranteeing each child a sound basic education is redesigning our school finance system to improve adequacy, equity, and flexibility.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
So with adequacy, we're talking about the baseline level of funding that needs to be in the system. We don't have enough funding, period. So we have to change that. But absolutely, we need to worry about how that money is spent. And, you know, there are some students in this state who have been receiving a sound basic education, who have had everything.
A large number, actually.
Right. So we need to focus on getting those resources to the students who have been consistently denied those opportunities. And so that's, you know, and there are also very particular recommendations in terms of programs and policies that can be implemented to help address a lot of the inequities that we see. And the flexibility piece is a really important one and one that relates to our local school finance study as well. The General Assembly has imposed restrictions on state funding allotments that make it harder for districts to move money around where they need it most. And that's a more recent thing. So even if there's some money in the pot, a lot of times they're not able to use it for what they need. And the local dollars actually matter more in that case because they're the most flexible.
Our North Carolina General Assembly, which often talks about the absolute essential importance of local control, has actually been removing local control when it comes to how we spend education
That's
dollars.
That's right, how they spend their state dollars.
So it would be nice maybe if they just went back to doing what they profess
and
to
that's
believe in.
A very easy fix that can be done right away. No additional money is needed to fix that, you know, right away, and we can create
so
a
practical result
plan.
Would be I'm a local school superintendent and I see I've got a need in school A, but I've got to have the flexibility to shift funds out of this particular line item to solve a crisis over there.
For a, you know, a teaching position to a teaching assistant position or something like
that. Got it. Right. Okay. So, all right, I get that. We need to be more flexible in how we spend our money. But again, we do need to spend more. I mean, there's no illusion, there's no question there that North Carolina is well below the national average and particularly below the average when it comes to our effort in terms of if you look at a share of our total income as a state and what we spend on public education, we're really almost at the bottom in the country.
I believe we're 48th in the country now on funding efforts. So we have a lot more wealth that we could be spending.
I think I'm correct that if we would just get up to about the national average in funding effort, we'd pretty much make up the gap that the Leandro report identifies.
That's right.
So it doesn't seem like it should be that difficult, but needless to say, we probably will run into a lot of challenges there. Yeah. Obviously, where a lot of that money goes when you increase spending on public education is teacher compensation, right? And not just teachers, but the whole all the educators in the school system. Talk to us about where we are there.
Right. So, I mean, we have seen minor increases in teacher pay in recent years, which is something, you know, it's a good thing in general, but we're still well below the national average. And teachers in North Carolina also make well below what similarly educated professionals make. You know, if you're thinking about trying to recruit new educators and, you know, the best and brightest into the profession, it's something that students who are going into, you know, thinking about what they're doing with their life now, it's not a very desirable or reliable profession to go into. And so we really need to address that, not only the pay, which is incredibly important, but also respect for the profession in general, a lot of the benefits that have been eliminated in recent years. I would say, you know, it's number two on our priority list this year. It's incredibly important. We have massive teacher shortages in this state that are going to only become an increasing problem as our population continues to grow.
So the competition often, we think of, oh, well, Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, but it's not like teachers are just want to pick up and move to another state to be a teacher in another state. It's more likely that they're going to leave teaching to go work in RTP or they're going to go work at some other a sales job somewhere where they could actually make more money in the private sector. And that's as much what we need to be focused on in terms of competitive pay as it is like what other states are paying.
Absolutely. Yeah. Although what the other states are paying matters as well, because we do hear from especially our northern districts that they're losing teachers who would be teaching in North Carolina who go across the border to teach in Virginia.
Coming up next, part two of our conversation with education policy expert Lauren Fox. Don't go away. Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In part two of my conversation with Public School Forum of North Carolina Director of Policy, Dr. Lauren Fox, we discussed several of the top education issues facing North Carolina in 2020, including the state's troubled A through F school grading system, the hope and promise that would come with adoption of universal pre-K, and the critical importance of monitoring the state's progress in complying with the landmark Leandro court ruling that requires the state to provide every child with an opportunity to receive a sound basic education. We're talking with Lauren Fox, who's the Senior Director of Policy for the NC North Carolina Public School Forum, and we're talking about all these great challenges that North Carolina has as a state in meeting its constitutional duty to provide children with a sound basic education. Another issue you identify in your report on the top education issues of 2020 is principals, right? We talk about having qualified, well-prepared teachers with adequate funding, but having really quality principals is another important issue, right?
Yeah, I think that research shows that teachers are the most important school-based factor in terms of determining, you know, student outcomes, but principals are number two. And I hear that all the time, that having principals who are really dynamic and amazing leaders is just critical to a school success. So absolutely, we need to be doing a better job, not only of compensating and helping our principals, but also ensuring that principals are incentivized to work in high-need schools, which right. is not the case right now.
Are there steps we can take to better prepare teachers and principals for the profession? I mean, obviously, paying better so that good people will want to take the jobs is critically important. But are there steps we should be taking to actually prepare them better, to educate them better, to have them ready to take on these jobs?
Sure. I mean, I think we also need to invest in our schools of education. And research has also shown that teachers who are prepared in North Carolina schools of education tend to have better outcomes and stay in the profession longer. So I think that investing in our wonderful schools of education and ensuring that they have the resources to prepare their educators is critically important.
And I know in that area, an important issue that continues to rise to the top of late is the issue of teachers of color and the fact that our HBCUs need to be more aggressively involved in the process of having more Black teachers in the in the classroom, because it makes such a difference in the lives, not only of kids of color, but actually this research seems to indicate that having a diverse teaching force helps all children, right?
That's right. I think of it as a teacher quality issue and a principal quality issue. Having a representative educator workforce is critical to our students' success. So one of the things that we advocate for in our top education issues is expanding the North Carolina Teaching Fellows Program, for example, to HBCUs. It's been whittled down to 5 institutions now, so we'd really like to see that expanded back to what it was.
Was there ever an explanation of why? I mean, at one point they eliminated it, right? And then it's kind of
brought back in another iteration.
Milder shadow, pale shadow of itself. Did we ever get an explanation of why the legislative leadership did away with the teaching fellows?
I imagine it's budget related. I'm not exactly sure why it was reduced to 5 institutions, but I know there has been talk about expanding it, but I think we need to be more aggressive about that and expanding it to more than just a couple institutions and trying to get it back to what it once was with, I believe, 16.
Right. Let's talk about accountability, which is another key priority that your most recent report identifies. It says revamp our school accountability model, eliminate or revise the A through F school grading system. This is the system where we actually attach letter grades to school and say, that's a D school because of these test scores that the kids got in that particular school. Can you talk to us about the A through F system and its problems?
Yes, this is one that we've been talking about since this A through F model was created. We're one of the only state that in their school grading formulas allocates such a heavy percentage to proficiency, which is a one-time measure of student achievement.
Test scores
at one time rather than growth over time, which is really, if you're trying to measure, you know, school quality, that's what you should be looking
at. I mean, if a school is in a low-income neighborhood and they've got a lot of kids who are really struggling, many from broken homes, but they manage to produce some growth, the fact that they're still scoring lower than average on standardized tests ought not to be a demerit for them, right?
And obviously, you want all students to get to a higher level of proficiency over time, but I've talk to so many educators who are working in schools that are doing amazing work and they're seeing a C or a D. And what does that say to those educators and to the parents and the students who are in that school who are working so hard and doing great work.
Maybe the parents who are looking to decide whether they want to move into that community.
Absolutely. I think that it would have a huge impact in terms of accelerating segregation based on parental choice. But the information that parents are getting actually isn't accurate in terms of how well the school is
doing.
So
should we just do away with this system? Is there some other, is it more, I mean, maybe that's your top, that's your first choice, but a second choice might be, okay, at least let's get this growth factor more into how we calculate this grade.
If I could choose, I would get away with it. I think that assigning letter grades is just stigmatizing in general. We should be looking at multiple measures when we're evaluating schools. There are a lot of, you know, you can look at things like social emotional learning. How well prepared is the teacher workforce? How diverse is the teacher workforce? There are lots of things that we should be looking at. But if the least we can do is revise the formula, we'd be happy to at least see progress on that.
Another issue that you identify and that has been sort of maddeningly ignored in the General Assembly in recent mm-hmm. years is the issue of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We have, the studies seem to indicate, literally billions, around perhaps as much as $8 billion in needs just to keep our schools together, hanging together. We know that a lot of schools are crumbling. We know that they're not well kept. Many are, you know, they have just basic needs when it comes to HVAC systems and you name it, particularly in our lower income parts of the state. And yet the General Assembly took no action on this year, even though the governor had a proposal, the House had a proposal, the Senate had a proposal. What gives there?
So the General Assembly came out with a proposal to fund infrastructure through a pay-as-you-go model, which, you know, given our desperate need, anything would be better than nothing. Yeah. But our state has a strong history of passing statewide school bonds, and we really need a major investment. $8 billion was the most recent estimate, but we think that it's much higher than that, actually.
And the governor had proposed something in the $3 billion range.
Yes, that's right.
And the idea is that when you borrow money and you have a bond, you get a bunch of money right away. You can mm-hmm. and then pay it off over time. Interest rates are low.
Right.
That it's worth it to do it that way. With a pay-as-you-go model, it's just basically you're just allocating part of the budget each year and say we're going to set aside a few hundred
million
dollars.
And it's not guaranteed.
Right.
So it's
so
a it's
just
a
year
risk.
To year. If the budget crashes next year, well, tough noogies.
And since the interest rates are low right now, we've been told by experts that it's a great time to vote on a bond.
Well, we'll hope perhaps that the General Assembly gets more serious about that in 2020. It seems like something that the record is that something that voters generally approve of if it's presented. There's rarely
a strong opposition
to that. They've
been pretty successful, but we haven't even had the opportunity since 1996.
Wow, 25 years. Amazing. Right. Our time is limited, but there's another incredibly vital issue that you highlight in your report that we want to talk about here, and it's been talked about in Leandro, which is the issue of early childhood education. Mm-hmm. When we talk about our K through 12 schools and how much we spend, are we up to the national average? But the reality, of course, is that so many of our children, they all come to our school, mm-hmm. you know, with some level of early childhood education, but it varies dramatically, and it's of incredibly often of poor quality or even mostly non-existent. And we know that that could make an enormous difference in how kids fare in their elementary school education. Am I right about that?
That's right. We think that we need to expand access to universal, high-quality pre-K and early childhood education opportunities. This is some of the, I would say, some of the strongest research in terms of long-term impact that we've seen in recent years, mm-hmm. that investing in early childhood has an enormous impact when you...
It's sort of the trend globally, too, right? I mean, in most advanced Western countries, we're moving in that direction where people have access to free, universal early childhood education. So the overarching issue here, again, is Leandro. This is the big dog that's driving things in North Carolina public school funding. We hope it will for years to come. The final priority you list in your report is let's establish a plan to mm-hmm. sort of figure out how we're going to make this Leandro thing go forward. How would that work? Talk to us about how you actually see us getting to the point where we would actually comply with the Leandro mandate and genuinely transform our public education system in this state.
I think that Judge Lee has asked for a path forward in the next consent order for how he can hold the state accountable for meeting its obligation. And I think that's what we need. We've been here for 25 years. We need to have a plan that is actionable so that we're not here 25 years from now. And having an expert group to help monitor that, not only in terms of whether the investments are happening, but how are they happening? You know, we talked about how additional money is spent matters, and we need to have people monitoring that along the way to make sure that investments are happening where they need to happen. So we're very hopeful that that this plan to monitor progress will be implemented, that we'll have people who will be watching this. The forum will. I can go ahead and tell you that. We will absolutely be monitoring and reporting on progress or lack of progress or regression. Hopefully that won't be the case.
We're very happy to know that the Public School Forum of North Carolina will be monitoring this, will be reminding us of our duties as citizens and as a state to actually provide a sound basic education to our children. And we're really thankful that Lauren Fox is the Senior Director of Policy there. Please keep up the good work. And people can find you online, ncforum.org. Is
That's right? Yep.
ncforum.org. Check out their work and support them if you can. So Lauren, we'll do this again in a few months. Hopefully we'll have made some progress.
Hopefully.
Look forward
to it. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.